From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Tens of thousands of people marched in San Francisco, California on Saturday as part of the Rise for Climate Jobs and Justice gathering. The powerful mobilization is considered the largest climate-related march on the West Coast. Many simultaneous mobilizations took place in cities around the world. The San Francisco March was designed to precede the Global Climate Summit being convened by California Governor Jerry Brown on Tuesday, and that will be a major meeting of state and municipal leaders discussing solutions to climate change. But many of the activists that march on Saturday are angry with Brown for promoting a fracking industry in California, which directly contradicts his claims of being a climate champion. My guest is Lucas Zucker, Policy and Communications Director with the group CAUSE. CAUSE stands for the Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy. Welcome to the program, Lucas.
Thank you, Sonali. Happy to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. So before we get into your criticisms of Jerry Brown, let's talk briefly about the march on Saturday. Tell us a little bit about what it was like. The images and videos that I saw showed a lot of joy. There was a lot of music and dancing, but also, of course, a lot of sort of anger.
Absolutely. We're proud to bring a busload of young people from our communities who have been fighting power plants and oil drilling in their neighborhoods, predominantly working class immigrant communities in the Central Coast of California. And I think for many of those youth, it was really inspiring and you know, maybe not what they expected from a climate march. Really incredible to see the diversity of faces, really often you know, people of color and indigenous people who are so often on the front lines of the impacts of the climate crisis be in many ways the face of this movement. And just an incredibly colorful, artistic, and yeah, often joyous, although really showing the strength of our resistance march and mobilization throughout the city.
Now, the gathering was called Rise for Climate Jobs and Justice. And I understand, of course, it wasn't just in San Francisco, although that was the biggest gathering. Often the biggest gatherings take place in Washington, D.C. But I understand that it was located, the sort of central march was located in San Francisco because people wanted to target this global climate summit that I want to get into briefly. But what happened elsewhere in other parts of California and other parts of the country and world? There were people in Canada and in parts of Africa and Asia and even Australia and New Zealand, right?
That's right. This really is a global movement, and we were lucky to be able to travel from our community to San Francisco to kind of share our perspectives and stories dealing with climate crisis in our area. But people from all over the world are part of this movement.
So you are in Central California, where there is this unusually large concentration of fracking operations, hydraulic fracturing. I mean, it is up and down the coast, but tell us a little bit about what you have seen. I mean, I just recently drove up the California coast to go to Sequoia, and we drove through this area that looked like it was part of some bizarre otherworld planetary mining operation. There were just all of these drills going into the earth, sucking out oil and gas. Give us a sense of what fracking operations look like under Jerry Brown's rule in California.
Yeah, absolutely. And really all throughout Central California, the Central Coast where I am, Central Valley and Los Angeles, you know, we have some of the country's most extreme oil production. Certainly, the fracking is heavily concentrated in Kern County, where it's often immediately next to homes, schools, neighborhoods. But all throughout the state, the use of kind of advanced extraction methods from cyclic steam to acidizing are being used to get at deeper, dirtier crude oil. That's often all that's left. We've had so much oil extraction in our areas that what remains is that kind of tar sands oil, beneath our groundwater aquifers that they're using advanced extraction methods to get at. So that really threatens kind of the drinking water of our communities. And as I mentioned, so often this drilling is from neighborhoods in South LA where drilling is right in the middle of densely populated urban areas to more rural communities like mine or in the Central Valley, where it's often threatening farm worker communities and agricultural communities. It is really people of color and low-income people who are on the front lines of the impacts to air quality and water quality of this oil drilling, and so it's so often seen that at the same time as we hear so much big talk of climate leadership from our governor, that oil drilling is continuing, and not only continuing but really expanding throughout our communities.
So we have a situation where this is a sort of a boom in oil production nationwide, overseen on a federal level by President Obama, who also considered himself a climate champion, who signed the Paris Accord, and who have tried to sell us fracking as some sort of transitional energy. It's led to a glut in oil and gas, which has led to a drop in prices, which has led, of course, to continuing to fuel a fossil fuel economy. And all of this happening at a time when we see the impacts of warming. We're getting news right now that Hurricane Florence is going to be hitting the East Coast as a Category 4 catastrophic hurricane, and evacuations have already begun. So hasn't Jerry Brown overseen an expansion of an industry that didn't need to be expanded? Why did he do that? And why is he now, I understand, just signed SB 100, which is the clean energy bill for California that Senator Kevin DeLeon passed or introduced. It was passed, and Jerry Brown just signed it. These seem to be very contradictory positions.
That's right, absolutely. And that's right that oil drilling has expanded, as well as in our community in Oxnard. We were fighting for the last 4 years against a new fossil fuel power plant being proposed in Oxnard. It's 85% people of color community with some of the state's highest asthma rates. And so often as we've struggled against more and more fossil fuel extraction and burning in our communities, our neighborhoods, we've seen our governor traveling to Paris and being seen across the world as this climate leader. And it seemed like a strange contradiction in our mind as community members are fighting against fossil fuels in their neighborhoods with no help from the Brown administration, even as we're seeing him kind of held up as a climate leader worldwide.
So he has also opposed offshore drilling off of the California coast after restrictions placed under Obama were removed by the Trump administration. It's interesting because there is obviously a difference between offshore drilling and onshore drilling, but only in that one is offshore and the other is onshore. It is still an extractive industry in both cases. That too is a contradiction that he is opposed. Maybe it's because it's the Trump administration doing it. He's opposed that offshore drilling off of California's coast. Maybe it's because the tourism industry would be impacted, but he has allowed and encouraged the onshore, if you will, fracking operations.
Right. So here in the Central Coast, we really know all too well the impacts of offshore drilling and the threats not just to marine ecosystems, but also to the health of our communities, where our coastlines are often the best and only access to free open space for a lot of our low-income families to get a breath of fresh air. But we definitely applaud the move to stop offshore drilling. But in our region, we actually have far, far more onshore oil drilling than offshore drilling. And it gets a different level of attention. Offshore drilling, results in spills that can, sicken and kill marine life in very, very graphic ways, in the news. But the onshore drilling is often near working class immigrant neighborhoods, rural communities, farm worker communities, polluting our air, threatening our drinking water. And so just an hour north of the famous oil rigs off the coast of Santa Barbara that have had so many spills throughout history and created so much controversy, just an hour north of Santa Barbara, we have Santa Maria, which is a 75% Latino community, a farm worker agricultural community, where some of the nation's largest oil companies are planning to drill over 750 new oil wells outside that community, which would redevelop what would become one of the largest oil fields in the state. And these are using some of those advanced extraction methods to drill through groundwater aquifers, which would threaten the drinking water and the livelihoods of farm workers in the Santa Maria Valley.
So you tell us a little bit more about SB 100. So this is a very incredible sounding 100% clean energy bill that would essentially transition California, I understand, 200% renewable energy by 2045. It took obviously a lot of organizing to push the California legislature into passing this and presumably Jerry Brown into signing it. And of course, gives Jerry Brown a great photo op ahead of his global climate summit. What is this bill effective? What would it do for California?
SB 100 is a huge step forward. It specifically applies to utility electricity, right? Hmm. So when we turn on the lights and where is that electricity coming from? It won't stop oil drilling in our communities or fossil fuels that are used.
It doesn't mean everybody is going to be driving electric cars in a few years.
That's right. That's right. It applies to our when you're getting energy from SoCal Edison or PG&E, that energy is going to have to come from 100% clean energy by the year 2045. And certainly in our community in Oxnard, where Oxnard has all of Ventura County's power plants and, has been kind of used as the sacrifice zone for dirty electricity production in our area, that is going to make a big difference for communities like Oxnard. Certainly we've seen the impacts of power plants that that produce our kind of dirty mix of electricity now. So we do see this as a big step forward, but we need so much more, right? And so that's why the folks who are gathered Monday and Tuesday and who mobilized this past weekend are saying, keep it in the ground. We don't want any more oil and gas extraction burning, and we need a managed decline of the fossil fuel production that we already have, and we need a just transition for the communities and workers and neighborhoods that have been most impacted by fossil fuels.
So let's talk about the Global Climate Summit that's taking place Tuesday. You and I are talking right before that's happening. I understand that this is being seen as a sort of mini version of the United Nations COP, the climate gatherings, the international climate gatherings. And this is something that Jerry Brown has convened. Who is expected to attend it? I'm seeing reports that activists are planning on crashing the event.
That's right. So there are political leaders, NGOs, and big corporate actors and CEOs from all over the world who will be attending this summit to really discuss solutions to the climate crisis. Unfortunately, we really feel like so many of the communities on the front lines of the climate crisis, the low income, immigrant, people of color, indigenous communities that are often the most impacted by the effects of climate change, from wildfires to hurricanes to drought, who have often the least resources and are often even intentionally excluded from disaster aid, are really often not at the table. We see often a lot of powerful politicians and big corporate leaders negotiating profit-driven market solutions. That so often actually still end up treating our communities as sacrifice zones, where we are going to still be polluted as corporate polluters are allowed to buy permits to pollute our neighborhoods, and plant trees thousands of miles away.
When you say buy permits to pollute our neighborhoods, let's explain that a little bit more, because that might sound bizarre to some people. You're talking about the cap and trade program.
Absolutely. So California has now had a cap and trade program in place for about a decade. And interestingly, a report out of USC found that in the state's communities of color and low income communities, we actually haven't seen emissions decline at all. We've seen carbon emissions decline statewide. But so often, what the cap and trade program allows is you've got a cap overall on emissions, but polluters are able to buy and sell these permits to emit a certain amount. So it might be $15 per ton of carbon dioxide, and so this means often in our state's lowest income neighborhoods, you have polluters who are able to basically buy the rights to continue operating old, dirty power plants and oil refineries, while essentially buying their way out of their obligations to clean up the air in these communities, even if other communities are seeing declines in emissions and air pollution.
So obviously, it's a good thing for Jerry Brown to at least be trying to do something in the absence of federal policy, right? I mean, we just have such a, and there's not even inaction at the federal policy level right now. There is active offensive action against our climate, against our environment. And so in that context, it is important for local and state leaders to actually be doing something about it. What could Jerry Brown do to convince you and others that he is indeed sincere? Should corporations be left out of the room when we're talking about climate solutions? And what are some of the solutions that I presume were discussed during the and promoted during the Rise for Climate Jobs and Justice gathering on Saturday?
That's right. As we've talked about, Jerry Brown has this mixed record on climate, where he has taken some core leadership where President Trump is taking us backwards and really devastating our communities. But I think what we really want to see is Governor Brown, creating deals with oil companies, be first talking to the communities on the front lines of the climate crisis and on the front lines of pollution from the fossil fuel industry, and uplifting our solutions. And those solutions are to keep it in the ground, to stop oil drilling and particularly fracking and these other extreme extraction methods in our neighborhoods, to be stopping any new fossil fuel production shutting down the existing production, while really having what we call a just transition, which is to create investment in community owned and community led clean energy in our neighborhoods, and particularly the neighborhoods and the places where workers have most been on the front lines of fossil fuels, places like Kern County or South LA. And to be creating things like community-owned solar, right, or solar cooperatives, clean energy that's attached to affordable housing. These are some of the things that we want to see: regenerative agriculture, that are going to both lead to declines in carbon emissions, but also really invest in jobs, in economic development, and not just economic development, but clean and healthy economic development in the communities that have, for so many generations, been sacrificed by this extractive economy.
So, Lucas, you're suggesting that the solutions are not mysterious. It's not that this is a complex problem that for which we need to study lots of ideas before we arrive at some conclusion. They're out there. It's just a matter of having the political will to implement them and having enough grassroots effort pushing Jerry Brown to do much, much, much more than he's doing, and actually to disavow some of the things that he's doing, like cap and trade, like promoting fracking. Do you feel that if California were to go in the best direction that it could go, that would have a critical ripple impact, not just nationwide, but worldwide? California is the world's fifth largest economy. And, unfortunately, global warming is a global phenomenon by definition. Even if, one state takes the perfect action, it's not going to protect that one state from the impacts that other states, other countries are taking. So do you hope that California's actions can really start a revolution on the issue of climate?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, California is the fifth largest economy, but we're also a state that has led in so many ways, on so many issues. And I think that other states across the country do look to us to see that these clean energy solutions are possible, But also a state with that's very complex, that has, we don't just have a large economy, we also have an incredibly diverse population. When people across the world look at California, they don't just see a Sweden or a, you know, a kind of a wealthy and white kind of progressive country, but they see people who look like them, and they see people who look like you know, third world countries and people of color all across the world. And when they see California leading, right, that reflects something that we have the solutions here, and that we're able to lead our way into the future in a way that we continue to still have a booming economy, but one that isn't based on extracting our labor, extracting our natural resources, but one that's based on regeneration, based on uplifting and investing in our people. And so I think if California is able to continue to take that leadership, it is going to ripple throughout the world. And that's what we want to see.
Any hint as to what you expect to happen at the Global Climate Summit? Who are some of the people attending, presumably from other cities, counties, and states? And is there expected to be some sort of climate agreement coming out of this?
I think we'll see what comes out of it. I think there'll be a lot of different solutions discussed and presented, but I think there will be real tension between those kind of more profit-driven solutions that depend on things like cap and trade, and depend on kind of the financialization of kind of these you know, carbon drawdowns, and direct grassroots community members who are dealing with pollution in their own neighborhoods, who are the ones with the power plants and oil refineries and oil drilling right in their backyards, who are saying, we need something more. We need something more direct and immediate and real and concrete.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Lucas, give out a website where people can find out more about your work.
Absolutely. We're at causenow.org, causenow.org. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/cause805.
And one last question, actually, as I'm realizing we're wrapping up our interview, but I mentioned earlier about this massive hurricane that's heading toward the East Coast. And, you know, there's people all around the country who listen to our show. And, you know, if they missed the San Francisco March or whatever local march was happening in their area, what's coming up and what are some of the ways in which they can be climate champions, climate activists? So the midterm elections are coming. It seems as though climate is an issue in the midterm elections, but maybe not a big enough issue.
People could absolutely organize their communities to vote and push the candidates running in their neighborhoods and their communities to take on this issue, and can organize in their own communities. Almost every region across the country has fossil fuel extraction production. And it might not be in your neighborhood. It might be in a neighborhood often that might be poorer and browner than yours nearby. But connect with people there on the ground and organize. We in our community fought for 4 years to stop this power plant and you know, a community-led effort of largely young Latina women was able to stop one of the largest corporations, you know, energy corporations in the world, NRG, that was trying to build a power plant, another power plant in their city. And so if they can do it, anyone across the country can do that.
Activism works. Lucas, thank you so much again.
All right. Thank you.
My guest has been Lucas Zucker, Policy and Communications Director with the Central Coast Alliance, United for a Sustainable Economy, or CAUSE. And we've been discussing the Rise for Climate Jobs and Justice Gathering, as well as the Global Climate Summit in California. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.